It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival begins Thursday night and runs through Sunday, bringing world-renowned artists to town. The annual event is put together by Janice Burley Wilson, the CEO of the August Wilson Center for African American Culture, who recently sat down with WESA's JazzWorks operations manager, Bob Studebaker, to talk about what this festival gives to the city.
I want to talk a little bit about who's coming and who's going to be playing and how it all works out for people who don't know. But I'm really curious about something I've heard people talk about, but you can talk about it with some authority, the international impact this has. The people in other countries and certainly in other cities in the United States who recognize that this is a venue to come to. This is a place that it's a destination to build your summer around in many cases. Mm-hmm. And for some people, it is the identity of Pittsburgh. Not everybody knows Pittsburgh as a steel-producing town. Not everybody knows the Steelers and the Pirates and the Penguins. But there are people in some places who know Pittsburgh, particularly out of the country, who know Pittsburgh because of the jazz that has been part and parcel of the city for more than a century now.
Yes. Pittsburgh is known globally as a jazz town. Anywhere I've traveled, when I say I'm from Pittsburgh, the people that I talk to, they immediately mention people like Art Blakey and George Benson and Mary Lou Williams and, you know, on and on and on. And so I'm very proud to represent Pittsburgh when I go other places. And typically when I'm traveling to other cities or internationally for work, I'm going to represent our jazz festival. We had a couple that traveled in from Tokyo to see an artist that they loved. And so it's really a true celebration of music. And when you look out at the audience from the stage, you see people of all different ages and colors and speaking different languages. And it's just a beautiful thing. That's what jazz does. It brings people together.
It really is. It's one of the things I've observed for decades now is jazz brings people across the boundaries that we put up for each other, for ourselves.
Yes.
In a way that I don't think anything other than in Pittsburgh, the Steelers cross all of our boundaries. The Pirates don't, the Penguins don't. No other cultural attraction does. But jazz pulls people from all walks of life, from all economic backgrounds. And you see it at jazz events, and you certainly see it in a larger scale because there is nothing as big as the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival as far as drawing thousands and thousands of people over the course of it's more than a weekend
hours,
now. It actually begins on Thursday this year.
Yeah, it brings people together in a really warm, kind of loving way. Yeah. And that's why I love this music so much.
And also people who love the bringing together people in a warm, loving way are the restaurants and the hotels downtown.
Yes, for
they
sure.
They reap the benefits of this.
Most definitely. 25% of our audience comes from outside of Pittsburgh. And I mean outside of the state.
Right.
Not out of downtown.
They're not driving.
They're not driving from Cranberry. They are coming from, they're getting on planes. They are driving in. They're taking megabus, they are staying in hotels, eating in restaurants, parking in our parking garages. And there is a financial, definitely the financial and economic impact of the festival. And millions of dollars are made every year by people that are living and working in Pittsburgh, which is a wonderful thing.
And they're leaving Pittsburgh with a wonderful perception of the town.
Absolutely.
It stays with them forever.
Stays with them, and they return.
Yeah.
I've been to festivals in other cities, other countries even, and seen our T-shirts worn
That's
by people.
That's got to be a great thing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It lets us know that we're making that impact. And
nice.
So we're very proud of the festival.
Well, this is the, how many years now?
We started in 2011. It's the ninth year.
My goodness.
Yeah.
And the lineup this year, I want to talk about some of the artists, but who is it the first night on Thursday?
On the first night, which is Thursday, and this is the first time we've done a Thursday night concert.
Right.
We're featuring a young, kind of up-and-coming drummer named Micaiah McCraven.
I've read about him. He's supposed to be a sonic, a curator of sound.
Yes.
A guy who blends hip-hop, legitimately blends hip-hop and jazz.
Right.
In a way that has really sparked people's attention. People who typically would not turn towards hip-hop are finding what he does very compelling.
Right. It's not a hip-hop concert. It's a jazz concert.
Yeah.
But he's taking some of those elements that he loves and he grew up on that you find in hip-hop and merging them into his kind of core jazz sound. And he will be performing on Thursday as a part of our series called Wall of Sound, which is kind of an intimate laid back kind of informal performance in our cafe area in the lobby of the August Wilson African American Cultural Center. Those tickets are on sale.
Okay.
And then on Friday, we have the big concert.
The one and only.
The one and only Patti LaBelle.
Which is already sold out.
Which is already sold out, but she's been playing a lot of jazz festivals this year, and this is the first time I've seen her do that. And I think that she's interested in trying out some new things, and so I'm anxious to see what her show looks like. I think she's going to do a lot of those classic songs that people love, but I think she's also going to try some different things, which is interesting.
And also Friday night, there is the Jazz Crawl, where there are multiple venues throughout the cultural district where jazz is performed, and people can just sort of do what I've done on many occasions for this, is just go from one place, enjoy something for a while,
and then move on to the next place.
Move on to the next place, and you're literally absorbing jazz in multiple places. It's multiple styles of jazz.
Yeah, and it's great because it gives us an opportunity to promote the great jazz musicians we have here in the city.
And the streets are full of people having a good time.
Full of people having a great time. Happy to be in Pittsburgh for the weekend.
Yeah.
Pittsburghers happy to see their friends and reunite with them and then meet new people. And then the restaurants are happy because they're jam-packed with people eating and drinking and enjoying great music.
And Saturday and Sunday is when the big outdoor summer stages host just about everything. There are still some ticketed events over the course of Saturday and Sunday, but primarily everything is outdoors. The stages are along Liberty Avenue, which is an improvement over Penn Avenue, where it was great there the first 7 years of the festival.
Yeah.
But Liberty Avenue is broader. It's wider.
It's bigger,
and it accommodates more people close to the stage.
Yeah. So as we've grown, we were able to move into Liberty Avenue, and the August Wilson African American Cultural Center is on Liberty Avenue. So that's sort of a backdrop or a kind of a home base for the festival, which is great. And just to clarify for people, the shows that are outside on the stages are free performances. The performances that are inside the August Wilson African American Cultural Center are ticketed.
Okay.
And so the ticketed shows are Micaiah McRaven, Patti LaBelle, which is sold out. After Patti LaBelle, there's the Taste of Jazz party.
That is the...
That's the big opening night celebration with
a lot of restaurants providing a sample of what they offer.
Yes. So it's a taste of music, taste of food, taste of beverages, libations.
Artist talks as well.
Artists, yes. Yeah. So we have multiple performances happening in the August Wilson African American Cultural Center during the Taste of Jazz. We also have about 16 restaurants that will be there on site offering samplings or taste of the delicious food that their jazz-inspired offerings, as well as drink specials. We have some sponsors that'll be mixing up some interesting jazz-inspired concoctions. Those tickets are on sale for the Taste of Jazz party. It's always a great party.
Yes, it is.
Saturday, we have the shows all day long outside on the stages. Those are free. And if you haven't purchased a VIP package, bring your chair. Because you'll need one.
And we should explain, there are chairs in a special roped-off area for people who have bought the right to sit in those. They're close to the stage.
Yes.
And if you don't have one of those, you just bring a folding chair and set yourself up somewhere along the avenue like thousands of other people.
Thousands and thousands of people. And there are great seats when you're camping out on the street. So you bring your chair and you enjoy the shows that start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and then go until about 8. And then we'll move into the August Wilson African American Cultural Center for the ticketed performances. And we have two performances. Well, actually,
this is Saturday night.
This is Saturday night. Three performances. Actress and singer Tamara Tooney
has a Homestead native.
Yes, and Homestead Native has a CD release. She recorded it here in Pittsburgh at Hyde Studios with musicians like Roger Humphreys, Max Leake, and some other really great Pittsburgh musicians. They're playing with her and will be playing on Saturday night. And then Paul Jost, who is a great vocalist.
He's really getting a name for himself.
Yes, I'm so excited about bringing him here. He scats, he croons, he's just really, really good. And I'm really excited about that show. We're going to be setting up a pop-up jazz club inside the August Wilson Center. And so it'll be like a club setting. They won't be in the theater. In the theater, we have a group called Black Women Rock, which is an all-woman orchestra rock group. And they are doing a tribute to Bette Davis, funk icon Bette Davis with special guest Nona Hendrix.
And we should explain that Bette Davis's last name comes from
Miles Davis.
Her one-time
she
husband.
Is yes, she they were married briefly, but she is considered to be the one that influenced him to move into an electric sound,
the sound that defined the last decades
yes,
of his career.
Exactly.
And then Sunday
we have the performances outside with the start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then end around 9.
And let me just interject here. The concerts are scheduled so that when one ends on one stage, it's just a few moments before another one begins on another stage. And
yes.
then there is a third stage. And there is always music happening. And you don't have to worry about, oh, I have to go hear this person, but I don't want to leave this person.
Yes.
They're staggered, so the start times allow you to see and hear and immerse yourself in everything and everybody.
Yeah.
An annual event that means a lot to the city. It means a lot to the city's place in the world of jazz, which is, Pittsburgh has had a place in the world of jazz mm-hmm. since there has been a world of jazz. The first decade of the 20th century, there were jazz artists in Pittsburgh helping to invent the music as it was percolating up from New Orleans and coming up the river to St. Louis and Chicago and making its way to other cities. It was here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for coming in and talking about this wonderful annual event. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too, Bob. Thank you so much for having me.
That was WESA's JazzWorks host and operations manager and longtime jazz festival volunteer Bob Studebaker speaking with the CEO of the August Wilson Center for African American Culture, Janice Burley Wilson. The full schedule for the Pittsburgh International Jazz Festival can be found at pittsburghjazzfest.org. I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA.
I'm Kylie Kaczynski. Still ahead on The Confluence, Michael Worster is a longtime Pittsburgh poet, literary figure, and founder of the Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange. He recently published his fourth poetry collection. Then, the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority increased rates by 14% earlier this year, but some low-income customers are struggling to afford the higher price. We'll talk with the board chair about what the PWSA is doing to help them. Find conversations, stories, and more from this and past episodes of The Confluence on our website at wesa.fm.
Fleetwood Mac is an incredibly popular group. They probably have a dozen number one hits, right? Well, no, they don't. There is, in fact, just one song by Fleetwood Mac that has graced the top of the pop charts, and that song is Dreams. The breakup song from the big breakup album, Rumors, hit number one on this day in 1977. It was written by Stevie Nicks about her ex and fellow Fleetwood Mac member, Lindsey Buckingham. Well, not that it was a competition or anything, but Buckingham's breakup song for Nicks, Go Your Own Way, did not perform as well commercially. For 91.3 WYEP, I'm Joey Spihar.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. When Lyme disease goes untreated, it can have devastating consequences. WITF's Brett Schultes shares why one man is part of a group hoping to change how insurers are covering the disease.
With the sun shining and birds chirping on a warm spring day, it's easy to see why Anson Flake loves living at the edge of the woods in Enola.
It was at the time, you know, a dream to have a house in the woods, and it still is. I love it. But, you know, as we'll talk about, there's a lot of ticks out here.
Anson never expected one of those ticks would lead him to the state capitol in support of a piece of legislation. But at some point in the early 2000s, he contracted Lyme disease.
I don't know if I got it here on the property, because we used to play paintball a lot, or if I got it on a hike. I used to hike a lot.
Flake found out he had it the hard way. He was on a sales call in Texas when he got a pounding headache.
The guy that I was meeting with said, hey, you're not looking so good. I said, I'm feeling terrible.
He had meningitis, a rare complication of late-stage Lyme. A doctor's quick response helped to save his life, and the meningitis was cured. But Flake says because he went so long without treatment, he had what doctors call late-stage Lyme encephalopathy. Some of the symptoms were terrifying.
Dementia type symptoms. It was forgetting how to go places that I'd been to 100 times.
It took years to be cured. And while today the 53-year-old says he feels great, because insurance only covered a few weeks of antibiotics, he says it took a lot of his own money to get better.
It's north of $50,000, which isn't really from a, you know, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
Flake is part of a group pushing for House Bill 629 that would require health insurers to cover whatever the doctor prescribes, including long-term antibiotic treatment. And this is where his cause hits head-on into some controversial questions about Lyme disease. Do some people continue to be sick after getting treatment? Do some people need more than 3 or 4 weeks of antibiotics? That all depends on who you ask.
They get involved, they go up a blind alley.
Philip Baker is executive director of the nonprofit American Lyme Disease Foundation. He says, basically, chronic Lyme disease, as some people call it, doesn't exist. He says there's no proof that people who develop chronic symptoms have Lyme, and no proof that more antibiotics will help.
So what's the reaction? They'll say, well, I'm convinced that I have Lyme disease. The tests are no good. I'll keep going from doctor to doctor until I find somebody that will tell me I have Lyme disease. It's like a cult in a way.
Baker notes 3 National Institutes of Health studies did find a severe impairment in health and quality of life among people reporting Lyme symptoms after getting treatments, but results showed no benefit to prolonged antibiotic therapy. Lorraine Johnson says 3 studies aren't enough.
When you close the book and say the science is settled, we know exactly how you should treat this disease within these parameters and no variation, you really ought to have a strong body of evidence behind you, but that hasn't been developed in Lyme disease.
Johnson is CEO of nonprofit LymeDisease.org, which advocates for people who say they have Lyme disease that hasn't responded to the standard treatment. Her group wants the NIH to do more studies, something she says needs to happen fast, because recent research suggests undiagnosed Lyme is much more commonplace than once believed. Seated in a reclining chair in his backyard, Anson Flake notes House Bill 629 passed the House and currently sits in the Senate Insurance and Banking Committee, where past versions of this bill have all stalled. But Flake says this year could be different. A lot of other states have adopted similar bills.
And they haven't seen a negative financial impact to the insurance industry.
And there's a new committee chair, Republican State Senator Mario Scavello of Monroe County, who supports a similar effort in the Senate.
What we'd love to see is give the healthcare practitioner the ability to make the decision on, does the patient need long-term antibiotics or not?
As scientists research Lyme, the debate likely won't end whether the bill passes or not. With insurance companies and doctors each having a stake in the matter, it's an issue that will continue to play out in the state capitol and in doctors' offices around the Commonwealth. In Enola, Cumberland County, I'm Brett Schultes.
And I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. For decades, Michael Worster has been a key presence on Pittsburgh's literary scene as a poet, advocate, and educator. Now Worster has published his 4th poetry collection, his first on a major press. 90.5 WESA's Bill O'Driscoll has this profile.
It's a Monday night at the Brentwood Library, and in a fluorescent-lit back room, a dozen poets sit at tables in a big U. This is the Pittsburgh Poetry Exchange's monthly workshop, where poets critique each other's work.
Pink was never so pale as this shade.
Shaheen Dill reads her short poem, A Hint of Pink.
This hint of slivered radish on a plate, translucent, glowing, a glimmer of flame.
First to comment is Michael Worster, who co-founded the workshop 45 years ago and still leads it. His critiques are concise.
If this were my poem, Here's what I would do. I would eliminate the third line, and I would retitle the poem A Glimmer of Flame. I love those first 2 lines, by the way. I think they're terrific.
Worster is 78 and walks with a cane. He's a quiet, bemused presence who for nearly half a century has nurtured Pittsburgh's poetry community. His stature was evident in early May when about 100 people came to Carnegie Lecture Hall to hear him read from his new book, titled Even Then. Joan Bauer, now a retired English teacher, was about 50 when she first attended Worster's workshop.
He was the person who really encouraged me because I had not written poetry since I was about 17.
Bauer herself became a force in local poetry as co-organizer of the long-running Hemingway's Summer Poetry Series. Worster grew up mainly in Iowa and loved poetry from an early age. When he moved to Pittsburgh in 1964, he says, he was selling encyclopedias door to door.
And one thing that I finally realized was that sales and poetry were not compatible. Being a salesman is not something you can turn on and off.
Changing course, he organized his life around poetry, the time to read, write, and teach it. In 1971, he took an office job as a welfare caseworker, a position he'd retire from some three decades later. Worcester staged poetry readings, including one by August Wilson, before Wilson left town to seek his fortune as a playwright. Worcester also worked to bridge the divide between the academic poets at Pittsburgh's universities and self-taught poets, like himself.
He moved in both kinds of circles.
Judith Vollmer is an award-winning poet who teaches at the University of Pittsburgh-Greensburg and has known Worcester since the mid-70s.
He's a mediator in that way, an artistic mediator.
Worcester also taught poetry for 17 years at Pittsburgh Center for the Arts. As a poet, Worcester has issued three collections on small presses. Even Then is on the University of Pittsburgh Press, his biggest publisher yet, and a real distinction for a poet not employed by a university. Worcester's poetry is sometimes straightforward, recounting things like amusing anecdotes set on the South Side where he lives. But many of his poems are much stranger. Here he reads one titled Poetry Song.
See one holy thing. The bells, maternal sleeplessness, the long pink feathers. Go immediately, but dubious, faithful, never dropping away. It creeps into everything, so bright it hurts. Rife from a poet's language, poetry, song, and your smooth skin. Days of my steps on the earth.
There's something about his work, really, that is singular in American poetry.
That's Judith Vollmer, the poet. She compares his poems to cantilevers.
They're very dreamy, and you can lose yourself in one line, and then you're into the next sphere almost. So it's like changing your brain.
Worcester cites a range of models, from Wallace Stevens and the Beats to the Surrealists.
Because surrealism, for the reader, involves the unexpected, and I like that.
Worcester said he doesn't worry people won't understand his poems.
If the poem is a good poem, then some people will get it and some people won't. I would hope that there would be a psychological unity to poems that are difficult so that people are affected by them.
After all, he doesn't always understand them himself, he said at his reading in May.
So when we think about all these poems that don't make a lot of sense, we think that it's perhaps some sort of secret code or secret language. Someday I'll figure out what it's saying to me.
I'm Bill O'Driscoll, 90.5 WESA News.
And I'm Kevin Gavin. You're listening to The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Earlier this year, the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority enacted a rate hike with the approval of Pennsylvania's Public Utility Commission, part of a multi-year plan to raise rates by about 49% by next year. But for some low-income customers, the higher price for water is difficult to accommodate. PWSA has programs to help people pay off their balances. Joining us in studio to talk about those options are Paul Lager. He is the chair of the PWSA board. Julie Quigley is PWSA's director of administration and information technology. And Will Pickering is senior manager of public affairs at PWSA. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Confluence, folks.
Thank you for having us.
Great to be here.
So let's walk us through PWSA's customer assistance programs. What are they? How did they get started? Julie, why don't we start with you on that?
Certainly. We started our customer assistance program out of a board direction, actually, back in late 2017. We knew that we had a significant rate increase coming up in January of 18. So the board asked us to place initially a winter moratorium, and we put that into effect. That protects customers from not being terminated for non-payment between December 1st and March 31st. That then evolved in the following months to a bill discount program, which is a reduction in your minimum water and sewer charges. And then lastly, we have a hardship cash assistance program, which is an actual grant to help customers pay off arrearages up to $300 a year.
Paul, Julie just mentioned about sort of a board directive. What did you hope to accomplish by that?
We know that everybody can't pay everything. And so for those people who are unable to pay the full amount, we'd like to get programs in place that help them to either get assistance with payment, to not be shut off in the winter, or a number of other things depending on the nature of the program. These people are the experts on the technicalities of the program. I'm the cheerleader. And one of the important things here is that we only have about 5% of the people that we think are eligible that are enrolled. I'd like to get 90 or 100% enrolled, and there are ways we can maybe move in that direction.
So how is that, do you have to take a proactive step in getting more people enrolled? We'll start with you on that.
So we've partnered with Dollar Energy Fund, which is a local nonprofit that actually administers a number of different assistance programs for other utilities like Alcosan, like Peoples Gas. And because they already know these customers and have them calling in, they're able to pitch our discount programs as well to make enrollment much more simple. So we're also promoting it at Julie's call center. When they're speaking to our customers, they're encouraging them to call Dollar Energy Fund and apply. Our bill inserts, our community meetings, of which we went to over 70 last year and 40 this year. We're really spreading the word, and one of the reasons we're happy to be here today is to let people know that this is an opportunity for them.
So, Julie, it's at the point person level, customer and point person at the authority then?
Yes. So what we try to do with each interaction, and we handle on average about 700 customer calls in on a daily basis, and most of those customers are responding to a notice that we have sent to them requesting payment either through the regular monthly bill or through some type of notice thereafter. So what we do is a warm transfer to Dollar Energy, and we are here today as part of our overall engagement program trying to, as Paul stated, bring more people into the fold. Currently, we have coverage for our winter moratorium. Our past season covered 27,000 customers. I'm sorry, I apologize, 2,715 customers. We'd like it to be 20,000. That's why we're here today. Also, our bill discounts enrollment year to date is just a little over 3,000 customers. And our hardship cash assistance, we've given out 170 grants totaling $39,345. But there's more dollars to be had. I spoke with Dollar Energy, and they stated that what they would like to actually encourage customers to do is to make that phone call. They can be reached at the 1-866-762-2348 number. It's a 10-minute phone conversation, and they can be vetted for all of these programs, plus lead line replacement assistance.
Right, and we'll put that number and other information on our website as well so that people can have access to that. Paul was mentioning about how many people are actually taking advantage, how many would like to take advantage. How many of the total customers would you say actually qualify for the assistance that PWSA is offering?
We've done some recent analysis, and we believe about 20,000 of our customers would be eligible for that monthly bill discount, which I would add it equals over $400 a year in savings. So it really boils down to a significant savings for our customers. So that's why we're making every effort to encourage people to proactively apply. And I will say that the program is relatively new. It's not something that PWSA has offered in previous years. So it's important for people to spread the word and know that this is an option for them.
Paul?
Kevin, here's the problem with programs for low-income people. You have to apply over and over and over again for each program. I'd like to set up a central place where you apply once, you get qualified for all the possible programs, all the possible utilities, because all utilities have programs.
That's what I'm going to ask you. Is it, you know, strictly PWSA programs, or is it utilities?
Everything possible.
So a one-stop shop.
And I have a conversation with the County Human Services Department to see if we can work together to make that happen.
It seems logical. It seems more efficient.
It is more efficient. You'd be surprised at the administrative hurdles, though.
Let's talk a little bit about eligibility requirements. What is necessary for someone to be eligible? Julie?
So each program has its own threshold of the federal poverty level. The winter moratorium is right now the best coverage. That's 250% of the federal poverty level. And our bill discount and hardship cash assistance are both at 150%. In order to be vetted for the program, the customer, again, must call Dollar Energy or be transferred to them from our department, our customer service department, and they're asked a series of questions about their household income, number of people in the household, but things such as People without a social security number or people without certain paperwork does not preclude you from being considered. So that shouldn't be a deterrent.
Is that one of maybe the hurdles that, Paul, you might have been alluding to of, you know, trying to get eligibility across all utility programs, is that maybe there are different definitions of eligibility?
They tend to be relatively the same. They're all based on the federal poverty level. But at the same time, they may have different qualifiers, and that is one of the stumbling blocks. You know, it's exhausting to be poor. You spend all of your time trying to make sure you get just enough to get by, and that's a full-time job. We'd like to stop that. We'd like to make it a one-stop shop. You apply once, you're in for everything.
Mm-hmm. Another challenge that we have at Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority is that the majority of our bills are sent to property owners. And that's because that bill is tied to the property itself versus a gas or electric utility, where if a tenant comes in, it's much more easily put in their name. So that means that we know we're missing a group of tenants who may be paying a water bill as a pass-through to their landlord, but it makes enrollment in our discount programs a little more challenging. So that's something that we're, as our program is evolving, looking to find out how we can engage more tenants and property owners to have their tenants be eligible to apply.
A follow-up on the eligibility, is there a time frame? You have to be so many months behind on your bill, or is it a dollar amount threshold? Does that come into play?
So for the winter moratorium, you only have to have a past due balance. So if you have anything outside of the original due date owed, then you could be vetted for that program. Bill discount, that is simply based on need. So if you're not able to pay your current charges, and you can prove such when you're calling our administrator, Dollar Energy, then you will have that discount on each monthly bill throughout the entire year. You would have to then call again at the beginning of the program, at the beginning of the year, to be vetted again. The hardship cash assistance is based on also a need, and that is an annual grant. And that is given out if the customer shows evidence that they've made an attempt to pay their bill. So currently, they do have to make a payment of at least $150 over the past 3 months, or $75 if they're over 65 years old.
Are you working with other community groups? You mentioned the Dollar Energy Fund, but are you working with other community groups that have interactions with citizens, with residents, about getting the word out about availability, about, you know, to increase awareness?
Yes, we are. We're engaging our community activists and community groups, not just through community meetings, but through a more formal advisory committee, where we've held several meetings to get their feedback and hear from them what may or may not be working with our existing program so we can improve it in the future. We're also convening with other cities to learn what they are doing to engage this group of potentially vulnerable customers who may need assistance paying their bills, because we know we're not the only ones approaching raising rates and affordability concerns. So we're trying to learn from others as we go.
And each one of those meetings that Will and his team sets up, our representatives are there as well with their laptops ready to help customers with their specific accounts.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. Our guests are Paul Legger, Chair of the Board of Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority, Julie Quigley, PWSA's Director of Administration, and Will Pickering, the Authority's Senior Manager of Public Affairs. The programs that you mentioned were in development well before that rate hike took effect earlier this year. It was done in advance of recognizing this is going to happen. But are they also a reaction to maybe billing problems that started when the private company Veolia managed PWSA? Paul?
Short answer is yes. The longer answer is water is a necessity of life. More as much as air, second to air is water. You have to have water. If you can't afford it and you get it shut off, you're in very serious danger. Your family can be in danger. Your kids can be in danger. So we want to stop that. This is not a giveaway program. This is a make sure you're alive program. Hmm.
PWSA represents, I believe, one of seven cities in the U.S. Water Alliance Water Equity Task Force. How is that group addressing, maybe even promoting, and how are you being a part of that, the idea of equitable water policies?
Sure. So, the definition of water equity is pretty broad. We're looking at not just affordability concerns, but how can, the money that we spend on projects trickle down to the communities where we're doing work. So including businesses and individuals in the work that we're performing on their behalf to improve their water system. And then we're also learning from these cities, which include Atlanta, Cleveland, Milwaukee, you know, how they're conducting their community meetings, how they're reaching these vulnerable populations, just to broaden the tent and make sure that we're learning from the best, we're learning from similar cities.
Yeah, we had the opportunity recently, Will and I, to go to Buffalo, New York, and meet with these other cities, and it was very eye-opening. There's a lot of initiatives going on to improve diversity in the workforce and also affordability programs, strengthening them, engagement of the customers. So we are looking forward to what this work will actually ultimately achieve throughout this year and next year.
Briefly, so how could easing and making it easier to enroll, to take part in these programs, simplify the whole process, if you would?
I think we want to make every effort to lower the burden. Just as Paul said, we recognize, you know, water and sewer service is essential to everyday life. Regardless of a home's financial circumstances, we want to make sure that we can work with them to make sure they're getting the assistance that they require. So a one-stop shop makes infinite amount of sense. That's one of the reasons we went with Dollar Energy Fund, is they are operating several other programs as well. So if we can reduce the number of phone calls in a busy person's life, we realize that that's something that we should do.
We have just a couple of minutes left. And Paul, I wanted to get to your take on another new development regarding PWSA. The authority board, including you, voted to end the longstanding agreement with the city of Pittsburgh effective early next month. City Council must still okay the new agreement. Mayor Peduto says it takes potential privatization off the table. What do you say?
Yeah, it does. There's a clause in the agreement that says that the PWSA will remain a public institution. Mm-hmm. And that's in line with our feeling about water. Water is a right. Water is something that people need to have, and therefore it is something that is within the public realm, not profit-making.
Mm-hmm. I understand that the new agreement has the city paying for the water that it uses and that PWSA will have to pay for city services. So bottom line, is this a wash? Could it be financially beneficial? How will it help PWSA?
I think initially it starts off as a wash. For years, we've been simply giving the city $7 million a year with no invoice, with no itemization.
The free water, if you would? Or
free water was included, but that was not something that we paid for. We just gave them $7 million. And that's been going on for years. That can't go on under the PUC, and it can't go on under general moral principles. So. Mm-hmm. What we need to do is set up a system where we are calculating exactly what we provide to the city, and they pay for that, and then the city provides us some things, and we pay for that.
So how, in the end, do you think a new agreement between PWSA and the city will impact your customers?
I don't think it'll impact the customers too much. It is basically charging the city for services that they've been getting for free. For instance, we don't charge them for water. We're going to start to charge them for water. So they have a five-year time to plan that into their budget. That's going to be difficult because it could be a very high number, multi-millions of dollars. They have to plan for that for tax purposes. So there could be some impact in taxes, but I don't see that as major if the planning is correct.
And is it over that five-year period? Does that help in the planning then?
Yes. Some people wanted us to slam them immediately with a water bill for all the water that they use. Remember, they fill swimming pools. They have spray parks. They have all sorts of things like that that use water that other people don't.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Paul Lager is the finance director, is the chair of the board of the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority. Former finance director for the city of Pittsburgh. Julie Quigley is PWSA's director of administration. And Will Pickering is the senior manager of public affairs at PWSA. Thanks to all of you for coming in.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, it's been 1 year since a white suburban police officer shot and killed 17-year-old Antoine Rose. We'll look at proposed and adopted changes in policing and get community reaction 1 year later. Today's program was engineered and produced by Kylie Kaczynski. Production assistance by Julia Zenkovic, Julia Maruka, and Hannah Gaskill. The editor and producer of The Confluence is Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.